This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Coming up, efforts by international organizations to help the victims of Saturday's tsunami in Indonesia. The dangers some journalists face for taking on governments.
Many cartoonists have had to flee their countries because they were brave enough to take on regimes or political figures.
And we'll talk with VOA's Larry London about Miley Cyrus's latest hit single. It's all in today's International Edition. We begin in Washington, where the partial shutdown of the U.S. government continues. Joining us is VOA's White House correspondent, Patsy Whitaker-Suara. Patsy, thank you for joining us again. President Trump spoke out on Tuesday about the shutdown. Where do things stand?
Well, it continues. Neither sides are showing signs of compromise over the funding for a wall along the southern border. And on Christmas Eve, I believe after the Dow closed down over 650 points, which is the worst day of Christmas Eve trading in history, Democrat leadership Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer released a joint statement saying that it's Christmas Eve and President Trump is plunging the country into chaos. And on Christmas Day, President Trump said that the government is not going to be open until we have a wall or a fence, and he puts it whatever they like to call it. So this suggests that he may negotiate over semantics to allow for a breakthrough. Because, as you know, the imagery that he has been using since his campaign, presidential campaign, is what he calls his big, beautiful physical wall. But in recent days, we know he's been calling it steel slats. And this is important because Democrats may become more amenable to approving money for fencing rather than a wall. We'll see when Congress reconvenes tomorrow. That's the schedule. And we'll see if there's any movement on that tomorrow.
All right. Well, you mentioned the stock market plunging on Monday. It seems to be rebounding a little bit today. Media reports say Mr. Trump is not happy with his Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin. What seems to be the rift between the two men?
So White House insiders are saying that in private, President Trump is very frustrated with the Treasury Secretary over the market volatility after Steve Mnuchin tried to calm the markets but failed. In public, however, President Trump says that he has confidence in Steve Mnuchin and blames the market volatility on the Federal Reserve. Instead, on a tweet, I believe, 2 days ago, he said, "The only problem our economy has is the Fed." And the president likens the Fed as a gopher who can't score because he has no touch. So, as you know, the president has repeatedly called on the Fed not to raise interest rates, but the Fed did raise the benchmark rates by a quarter of percentage point. And this public shaming of the central bank by the president, analysts say, is really not helping the markets. The Wall Street Journal have reported that former senior economic officials have privately warned the White House that the president's tweets are actually making markets more jittery and triggering losses.
Does President Trump actually have authority to tell the Fed what to do?
No, he's not. I mean, the Fed is supposed to be independent, and that's what some of the critics are saying, is that the president does not understand the role that he has over the Fed. So he can certainly, all these criticism and all these attacks on Twitter on the Fed is creating more concerns from investors.
You talked earlier about the border wall, and that has been in the news an awful lot during 2018. And a second child died along the border with Mexico on Tuesday while in custody of the Customs and Border Patrol. What steps are they taking to prevent this from happening again?
Yeah, you're right. This is the death of an 8-year-old boy from Guatemala. This is the second death of a child in the custody of CBP. And after the death of that boy, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection ordered medical checks essentially on every child in its custody. So CBP is considering options to ask for medical assistance from other federal agencies, including the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, as well as Department of Defense. So we don't know how many children are currently in the agency's custody, but CBP and the Trump administration has been sharply criticized by immigrant activists for holding these children, detaining these children in what they call these facilities that are overcrowded and often cold, that were just not meant to hold children.
All right, Patsy. Well, thank you for joining us for all the latest that is going on here in Washington and around the country. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study from a pair of geophysicists proposes our current ice age, which began between 2.6 and 3.2 million years ago, may have been caused by a true polar wander, or a shift in the geological location of the Earth's poles. It's thought that this phenomenon could be caused when dense lumps of the Earth's mantle builds up in areas far from the equator. The study from researchers at Rice University in Texas suggests over the past 12 million years, this true polar wander has caused Greenland to move close enough to the North Pole to kick off what some call the Quaternary Ice Age. To reach their findings, the scientists analyzed fossil signatures in deep ocean sediment samples, the magnetic signature of oceanic crust, as well as the position of the mantle hotspot that created what are now the Hawaiian Islands. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Welcome back to VOA's International Edition. Indonesia continues search and rescue efforts following Saturday's deadly tsunami. Heavy rains are complicating efforts to provide aid to communities devastated by the giant wall of water. Officials say more than 429 people were killed, with another 1,500 injured. The International Red Cross is helping with relief efforts. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA, and she actually spoke earlier today with the IFRC in Geneva.
Indonesia is recovering from its latest tsunami as the nation marks the anniversary of its deadliest and most destructive disaster. On December 26, 2004, the worst ever recorded Indian Ocean quake and tsunami struck Asia. Nearly 250,000 people in 13 countries were killed, most in Indonesia. Important lessons have been learned from that long-ago disaster. These are now being applied by the emergency teams rushing in to provide aid and ease the plight of the survivors. Red Cross spokeswoman Laura Ingo-Fontaine tells VOA that colleagues on the ground report many survivors are huddling in temporary shelters away from the shore because they fear a rush of more tidal waves.
But they've started to emerge in search for loved ones and to assess damage to their property. And what we're seeing right now are a lot of people with broken bones and broken homes, and people are understandably very shaken and jittery because of this disaster.
Ingo-Fontaine says the Federation is releasing more than $333,500 from its Disaster Relief Emergency Fund to help the Indonesian Red Cross scale up its response.
Our priorities right now are to ensure emergency medical relief, clean water, access to clean water. So the Red Cross, the Indonesian Red Cross, has deployed 14 water trucks. We are ramping up medical care, psychosocial support, sanitation services for about 7,000 people in the affected areas.
Ingo-Fontaine says the Red Cross also has deployed two helicopters to support search and rescue efforts before that window closes. The tsunami struck without warning, sweeping over popular beaches. It engulfed tourist hotels and coastal settlements. Authorities say the waves may have been caused by a massive underwater landslide that followed eruptions by Anak Krakatoa volcano. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For the latest on relief efforts in Indonesia, please visit us at voanews.com. The year 2018 proved to be one of change in U.S. politics. Opposition Democrats won back control of the House of Representatives in the November midterm elections, and that could have a profound impact on the next 2 years of Donald Trump's presidency. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more.
Thanks to you, tomorrow will be a new day in America.
Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi celebrating the midterm results that returned the House to Democratic control.
I am Congresswoman-elect Rashida.
Democrats fueled their victory with opposition to President Donald Trump, spurred by a strong turnout of women and progressive voters on behalf of candidates like Massachusetts Democrat Ayanna Pressley.
We have affirmed that while this could go down as the darkest time in our history, we won't let it be. And instead, we will be defined by our hopes, not our fears.
Thank you very much. Please.
President Trump now faces the prospect of a stalled legislative agenda and numerous oversight investigations launched by House Democrats. But Trump remains defiant.
They got nothing. Zero. You know why? Because there is nothing. But they can play that game, but we can play it better.
The fact is, you do not have the votes in the House.
Nancy, I do. And we need border security.
Trump and Democratic leaders have already clashed over funding for his border wall, a preview of the partisan fights to come, says analyst John Fortier.
Democrats will certainly use their majority to highlight some differences with Donald Trump and to investigate the Trump administration. And then we'll be spending this year leading into the presidential election of 2020, so it's a transition year.
Without full Republican control of Congress, Trump may be looking to cut some deals with Democrats, says Jim Kessler.
At this point, we have not seen Donald Trump really have the ability to work with Democrats to cut any sort of deal in the first 2 years. So Mr. Art of the Deal has really fallen short. We'll see if that is possible this time.
But the president will also have to deal with the Russia investigation, which may be moving toward a conclusion in the coming months. Veteran political analyst Tom DeFrank.
This is a watershed year coming up for President Trump. I mean, he's going to have to confront whatever it is that Robert Mueller says about him or alleges. And I think it's going to be a difficult year for him.
This election's about jobs and judges, borders.
Trump will be increasingly focused on the next presidential election. But so will scores of Democrats who hope to defeat him, says Guillen McKee.
You know, I think the reality is that the 2020 campaign has begun. That's probably unfortunate, but that shapes everything going forward.
Ours is the greatest political movement.
What happens in 2019 could go a long way to determining whether Donald Trump is a one-term or two-term president.
Again, thank you very much, everybody.
Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Politicians in the U.S. and around the world are often skewered in editorial cartoons. These political cartoons have been around as long as there's been political discord and dissent. In the U.S., they're a vibrant part of American culture and history, and no matter how controversial, are protected as free speech under the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. VOA's Julie Tabo spoke with an American Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist about the current state of cartooning.
Matt Worker draws cartoons for a living. He's a staff cartoonist for Politico, an American political journalism outlet just outside Washington.
We're a strange mix of things in that we are making serious commentary on serious topics, but we're doing it not so seriously, and we get to draw our opinions with silly pictures.
The Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist says the main advantage of a political cartoon is being able to communicate an opinion very quickly.
I can draw a picture and put in a little word bubble, and you can read it in about 4 seconds, and you get it. It has to hit you in the face kind of hard and fast, and you know it when you've been hit.
In this cartoon, for example, Worker was inspired by an iconic image by American artist Norman Rockwell, reflecting a traditional scene of American culture. The cartoonist says over the years, his craft has evolved.
When I started 40 years ago doing cartoons, an editorial cartoon was a black and white single panel cartoon in a newspaper. And now cartoons can be color, they can be animated, they can be graphic novels that are political.
Like this 2018 Pulitzer Prize winning work by journalist Jake Halper and illustrator Michael Sloan, currently on display at the museum in Washington. The series tells the story of two Syrian families' harrowing journey from their homeland to the U.S., where they settled as refugees in 2016. Patty Rule is vice president of exhibits at the museum.
Since the beginning of this country, editorial cartoons have been framing issues and framing debate from, you know, Ben Franklin, the live free or die, the segmented snake that rallied the 13 colonies together. So it's always been a part of this country and the world's way of freely expressing ideas and debate.
But free expression sometimes comes at a heavy price. In 2015, Islamic terrorists attacked the offices of Charlie Hebdo, a French satirical magazine, after it published unflattering cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. 12 people were killed in the attack, including several prominent cartoonists.
And within their culture, they're certainly entitled to be offended, but they're not entitled to decide that they're going to go to Paris and kill the people that created that cartoon. Many cartoonists have had to flee their countries because they were brave enough to take on regimes or political figures.
Worker hopes that in these troubled times, people will appreciate cartoons for what they are.
I think the good kind of political cartooning is something that slips in a really good political point with a certain amount of good humor and wit that people will process, and hopefully it won't make them angry, but will make them think.
Julie Tabo, VOA News, Arlington, Virginia.
To see some of the political cartoons mentioned in the story, please visit voanews.com. You're listening to VOA's International Edition.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
You're tuned to International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel. I'm joined now by the host of VOA's Border Crossings, Larry London. Larry, I hear that Miley Cyrus has a new single climbing the charts.
Yes, Jim, she's back. It's been about a year since we heard from Miley, but she's now back and working with Mark Ronson on a new song that's on his upcoming album. It'll be Mark Ronson's fifth CD. It's called Late Night Feelings, which comes out in 2019. Mark Ronson is best known for Uptown Funk with Bruno Mars and Rehab with Amy Winehouse. He's a producer. He's been around for a number of years. Very talented guy, but it's Miley Cyrus's voice we hear and face we see in the video that she just filmed in South Africa. So let's check out the brand new single, Miley Cyrus and Nothing Breaks Like a Heart.
This world can hurt you. It cuts you deep and leaves a scar. Things fall apart, but nothing breaks like a heart. Nothing breaks like a heart. I heard you on the phone last night. We live and die by pretty lies. You know it. We both know it.
Wow, that's a horrific song. I didn't really like it.
Well, she's got a powerful voice,
yeah.
And, you know, it's a ballad, which is kind of unusual for her. She typically sings happy, upbeat party songs like Party in the USA, but she can do a ballad well also. And so there you have it. Nothing Breaks Like a Heart. And Miley Cyrus has had an interesting year. She lost her home in Malibu recently, as you recall in the news, the California fires that destroyed many houses. Her fiance, Liam Hemsworth, who's an Australian actor, she refers to him as a hero because she was in South Africa filming the video for the song when the fire was happening. He went back to their house to rescue her 7 dogs, 4 horses, 3 cats, and 2 pigs. And the two of them have been together, not the pig and Miley, but Liam and Miley, since 2012. And when she was asked in an interview recently about marriage, she said she's got big plans in 2019. So We shall see. Now, Miley's been famous for quite a number of years. She comes from a famous music family. She was on the Disney show Hannah Montana 12 years ago on the Disney Channel. She played a character named Miley Stewart, which is similar to her name Miley Cyrus, which is not her real name. Her real name is Destiny Hope Cyrus, but her dad named her Smiley as a kid. Billy Ray Cyrus called her Smiley because she was always happy and smiling. And so she adopted the name Miley for her TV character. She won the MTV Artist of the Year Award in 2013. The last album we had for Miley was 2017, called Younger Now. The new album coming up sometime in the next year will be her seventh album. And so the new song is called Nothing Breaks Like a Heart.
Larry London, always good to talk to you. Thanks so much. You can listen to Larry on Border Crossings Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC right here on VOA.
This world can hurt you. It cuts you deep and leaves a scar. Things fall apart, but nothing breaks like a heart. Nothing breaks like a heart.
And a big congratulations to Miley Cyrus and Liam Hemsworth, who, according to multiple media reports, were married last weekend. You're listening to International Edition. A group of young female business owners in Guinea-Bissau banded together to learn more about the business world and increase sales. A year later, their efforts are appearing to be paying off. Ricky Shyrock reports from the West African nation.
From street vendors to women who own their own shops, Adele Gomes likes to encourage young female entrepreneurs in Guinea-Bissau. Gomes is president of the Young Women Entrepreneurs Group in Bissau, the capital. She wants to encourage young women in the West African country to expand their businesses and become financially independent.
We created this association because we felt weak, so we wanted to gather together and everyone can bring their ideas together.
They are a small group of about 12 women who own a variety of businesses, from clothing design to event planning. December marks the group's one-year anniversary. The group organizes an annual exposition in Bissau to showcase their products. They also cross-promote each other's brands on social media.
My business has improved, and not just mine. People are more motivated to participate because the people participating are seeing improvements in their business.
Designer and group member Adele Dos Santos says her orders have increased too. Dos Santos, who has a daughter, says running a business and managing a household is challenging.
The biggest challenge is the management of our time, especially for us women. We don't want to just be limited to doing things at home. We want to express our knowledge outside of the home as well.
According to the World Bank, nearly one-third of businesses in Guinea-Bissau are owned by women. Local economist Augusta Enriquez says that's why it's in the country's economic interest to support female entrepreneurs. But, she cautions, youth unemployment must also be addressed for the economy to grow. For now, the young women entrepreneurs hope they can help each other carry the load. Ricky Shryock for VOA News, Bissau, Guinea-Bissau.
And you've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com and on the VOA mobile app. Thanks for joining us, and our thanks to director Dan Brown, and a special thank you to Suli Terawali, who is spending his final day with us before retiring from VOA. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Thanks for being with us.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA1, the voice of America.